wild, wonderful God, Virginia. There's no statute of limitations on a murder. There's no statute of limitations on a burglary. There's no statute of limitations on a grand larceny. There's no statute of limitations on an arson. There's no statute of limitations on malicious wounding. There's no statute of limitations on embezzlement. In short, there is no statute of limitations on any save perhaps one felony. And the statute of limitations on misdemeanors is 1 year.
The taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
The Rick Smith Show, coming to you live, and with everything except Rick Smith. I'm Bob Kincaid. Rick is enjoying some family time away, and I'm more than happy to be in the chair for him this evening. Coming to you live from wild, wonderful, almost level West by God, Virginia. I'm Rick's colleague at The Horn, America's liberal voice, headonradionetwork.com. You know what? If you're not behind the wheel of something or doing something that would otherwise make it entirely too dangerous for you to do so, come on over to headonradionetwork.com and jump into the chat room. We have an excellent time. Five nights a week, headonradionetwork.com. Click on chat room. The registration is both free and easy, and you'll be right in there with a bunch of really, really good liberal folks enjoying their company and the true cutting edge modern manifestation of what it means to really participate in multimedia. So we've got 3 hours tonight. It's about a minute past 9 o'clock here on the East Coast, and I will, of course, be interested in seeing what you have to say on a number of topics. You're welcome. As far as I'm concerned, once you get used to my personal style, I'm not interested in telling you what to talk about. This is not Wink Radio. This is not radio where we necessarily follow a script or make determinations on what interests you. You know, in a lot of radio out there, you have to be on topic with the host as if the host was some sort of Wizard of Oz or something. No, you can bring to the table what you want to talk about. This is Tuesday. We are a week out from the horror that was the past Tuesday, the failure of the Mugwump Democrats, and frankly, the triumph of liberalism. I call it the triumph of liberalism because the liberal Democrats were just fine in the House of Representatives, by and large, Alan Grayson notwithstanding. And we're finding out that people in America, given a choice between a phony Republican, a phony Repiglican, or a real Repiglican, will generally vote for the real Repiglican. I don't know why the Democratic Party is surprised at that, but apparently they are. If you want to get in touch with the program, you know what? The phones are open from beginning to end. If you want to get in touch with the program, jump in. The number is 888-520-RICK. 888-520-RICK. For those of you who don't like wandering around trying to spell on your telephone keypad, that's 888-520-7425. And we will have a lovely conversation. I'm not going to run anybody off or make anybody get it said in a hurry or anything like that. We have an opportunity here to engage in what I like to call conversation radio, and I encourage you so to participate. I am coming into the studio from a great distance, by the way. So, if there are any audio issues, I beg your indulgence, but hopefully this is coming through as English and we can all speak it just fine that way. There's a number of places to go, as we begin this evening. And I'm interested in knowing where you want to go. And, in addition to the phone number, that I just gave out, 888-520-RICK, 888-520-7425. You can also always reach me on these evenings when I'm filling in for Rick. You can reach me by email at Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Bob Kincaid at gmail.com. I try to answer all emails as they come in. And, you know, I recognize that this is not your father's broadcasting. People listen a lot of different ways. We're going out over ordinary, old school terrestrial radio, but we're also going out over the internet in a live stream at headonradionetwork.com. You can get that live stream a variety of ways. You can even listen on your telephone now, your cell phone, by loading a player on your Android device. It's a free application. It's called Tune In Radio, T-U-N-E-I-N Radio, Tune In Radio, free application on your Android device. If you've got an Apple iPhone, you have to pay $1.99 Steve Jobs tax, but you can get Tune In Radio there. Just search there for the Horn or Head On Radio Network, put it in your favorites, and we're with you wherever you go as long as you've got some sort of a wireless signal going into your cell phone. Isn't that cool? Aren't we just smack dab on top of the Jetsons? Pretty soon we'll all just be eating food in pill form and having Rosie the robot clean our apartments and be tormented by the Uniblab 10,000 at work. Wait a minute, we already are tormented by the Uniblab 10,000 at work, aren't we? And at home too. But all of that aside, I've thought a lot about where I'd like for this program to go this evening. And the thing that keeps coming back at me, the thing that keeps sort of popping up in my face, is the notion that we're only a week away, a week out from the disaster of blue doggerism Democrats. And man, as Hunter S. Thompson said, the hogs are in the tunnel. I mean, the wingnuts are out there and losing what was already left of their otherwise tiny minds, the teabaggers and the birthers and the deathers, and so, oh my God, it is, well, it's a lot like walking past the freak show on the Carnival Midway looking at these pig lickings. Case in point, Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry. I never say Rick Goodhair Perry without recalling that the late, great Molly Ivins coined that phrase, and it will forever stay, it's sticking like glue. Tell me, because I'm presuming that the audience that I'm speaking to, beyond the regular internet audience with whom I'm familiar, the terrestrial radio listening audience that I'm listening to, running up and down I-81 and so forth, sitting in your homes, hoping that somewhere along the way we'll play some country music or something. I'm guessing that you're not the like me, because I'm a hillbilly. See, I'm a hillbilly. I'm a redneck. I'm folks. I'm assuming that you're a little bit like me, except Pennsylvanian and I'm West Virginian. And you're not, you don't eat a steady diet of hummingbird tongue canapes and, lark's vomit toast points and the kind of foolishness that our betters are so fond of swilling. I'm figuring I'm talking to a bunch of beans and cornbread folks, right? Yeah, I thought so. As such, we sort of like to think of ourselves as the backbone of the we, the people that we talk about in the discussion about what it means to be an American, because we are the people. You know, we're the ones that when George W. Bush wants to have a war of choice and go and wipe out Hootie and Cootie and kill Saddam because he tried to kill my daddy. We're the ones whose families get asked to march our butts off overseas and get shot at and blown up. We are the American backbone, right? Yeah, you know, all the CEOs and the corporatists and the Wall Street bankers, they didn't send their children to the blazing sands of Iraq. And they didn't send their children to the frozen passes of Afghanistan. That was for you and me, our families, our friends, our neighbors. We're the ones that the weirdos from the Westboro Baptist Church pick at the funerals with their hate-filled, vicious, venomous, toxic signs that say, God hates fags and thank God for dead soldiers. We're the ones. We're America. We work for a living. You know, there's a great old movie out there called Matewan, in which a fella says, the way I look at it, there ain't but two kind of people in the world. Them that work and them that don't. They don't, we do. And with that in mind, I'm just kind of curious to know if there are people out there, and because I'll be honest. I'll be painfully honest. I don't allow Republicans on my program. I don't. I have no time for them. I don't allow teabaggers on my program. I don't allow libertarians on my program. Largely because in this country, the right wing owns so much of the media. You know, massive corporations own GE, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, CBS, ABC. They own the media. They're not like you and me. And so it turns out that there are actually statistics out there. You know, those of you who are familiar with my program know this already. This is sort of learning curve stuff for those who aren't. There are 1,000 hours. Just let that rattle around like a marble in your head for a minute. There are 1,000 hours of Hannity and Limbaugh and Beck and Savage and all of those other right-wing freaks. There are 1,000 hours of that. For every hour that a Rick Smith or a Bob Kincaid or other heroes of liberal broadcasting like Mike Malloy and Tom Hartman produce, there are 1,000 hours for every of right-wing hate casting for every hour of fact-based liberal discussion. 1,000 to 1. So that's why I don't ordinarily allow Republicans onto my program. But you know what? Rick's not listening right now. Here's your deal. Just this once. This one time only. I want to know if you're into it, Mr. Teabagger, Mr. Republican voter, Ms. Want to take my country back, but whatever. I want to know what it is you expect out of this Republican majority in the House. I really want to know that. Because I want to know if you are willing to be as critical and as demanding of this gang that have been put into office and will take office in January. I want to know if you're going to be as critical and demanding of them as my side has been of the majority that we had who ultimately spat on us and disillusioned us. I'll be interested to hear that. You know the number? 888-520-RICK, 888-520-7425. I'm not going to scream at anybody. I just want to hear, for my own sake, I want to hear whether or not these disenfranchised people who voted Republican, even though the Republicans were the ones who put us in this mess, I want to hear if they're just going to sit back and go back to watching the Dancing with Bristol Palin. I want to hear if you're going to do that, or if you're actually going to be serious members of the political process, pay attention, and at least be well informed enough to know when the wood is being put to you. Case in point, Rick Goodhair Perry in Texas, whom I mentioned a few minutes ago. Now, after years and years and years of nightmarish Republican rule in the great state of Texas, that state is in a nightmare mess. Of course, that's what happens when you put Republicans in charge. They rob the Treasury and then turn around and tell you that that they did it for your own good. That they're bringing you good government by bringing you no government. So Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry shows up on Fox News talking to Greta Van Plastic Surgery, Greta Van Susteren. And he said yesterday, well, this is what he said. And this is going to tell me a lot, the right-wing response. This is going to tell me a lot about what you think of your fellow Americans. Greta Van Plastic Surgery, Greta Van Susteren, Greta Van Facelift, Susteren, said,
healthcare, there's going to be a lot of challenges in the next 2 years. What's your view of the healthcare program?
That was her question to Rick Goodhair Perry. Governor Rick Goodhair Perry responded, I'd like to see states be given the opportunity to opt out of the Medicaid program that we are looking at today. We think in Texas over the next 6 years that we could take and find a private insurance solution and better serve our people, put more people under coverage, and save $40 billion for the state of Texas and $40 billion for the federal government because it is a matching program. You got that? You with me? Governor Rick Perry of the state of Texas wants to opt the state of Texas out of Medicaid. How does that sit with you? Because this is what he's talking about is throwing out into the cold under the bus. And, you know, when you're thrown out into the cold and under the bus, you've been pretty well done in. 3.6 million citizens of the state of Texas. Poor people. And by poor people, let's get something straight. We're not talking about people who don't work. We're talking about people who work harder than most CEOs work. Because when you're poor, folks, you have to work twice, three times, four times, 10 times as hard just to keep your head above water. And Governor Perry says that he wants to balance the budget on their backs. There's only one problem. It won't, as Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry says, solve the Texas budget crisis. Not at all. All it would do would be to hurt the most fragile people in that state. Are you okay with that? If you're a liberal, how can you stomach it? Do you find yourself either way just kind of wishing that Texas really would secede? But then again, they wouldn't have any interstates, they wouldn't have any roads, they wouldn't have any military bases. No, they'd just have... Well, I guess they'd just have 3.6 million people who were sick and couldn't go to the doctor. But how are the well-to-do down there, the George W. Bushes and the Lauras and the that pearl-clutching old beast Barbara Bush and old Pappy Bush, how are they going to survive in a world where they don't have poor people, poor working-class people to carry the water for them, to meet their every need? What is this a sign of? Is this the America that the teabaggers voted for? I really don't know. We're talking about a governor who's not going to remedy his state's budget problems, but actually make them worse because billions of dollars would go out of the Texas state economy that supports hospitals, that supports doctors, that supports nurses, both RNs and LPNs and certified nursing assistants, that supports social workers and psychologists and psychiatrists, that supports surgeons and neurologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, that supports hospital administrators. Is this what the teabaggers voted for? Is this the America that you want? I would really like to, I don't know. Usually when you're dealing with right-wingers, it's hard to get them to talk outside their own echo chambers because a right-winger cannot compete in the marketplace of ideas if the level playing field is anything resembling level. But if you want to have that discussion, and AFU, not just right-wingers, if you want to have that discussion, the number is 888-520-RICK, R-I-C-K, 888-520-7425. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. There are a million other things to have a look at this evening. Speaking of Texas... Oh, is this a good idea? I don't know. Would this play in Pennsylvania? Would this play in Pottstown? Texas is so broke, so economically devastated by years upon years, in excess of a decade now, of bad Republican government, that they're desperate for something to make a buck. Remember the old Bob Newhart show? Not the old Bob Newhart show with Suzanne Plachette, but the newer one that was set in Vermont, Newhart. Remember the neighbors, Larry, Daryl, and Daryl? Hi. My name's Daryl, or my name's Larry, and this is my brother Daryl, my other brother Daryl, Larry, Daryl, and Daryl. Yeah, yeah. And remember what their business motto was? Anything for a buck. It has apparently been adopted by the state of Texas. According to a report in USA Today, and, you know, if USA Today prints it, it has to be true, right? I can't believe I'm reading this. This is like reading something. This is like something you'd expect in a great, great film, Idiocracy. Texas has decided to corporatize their license plates. It started last November. A company called My Plates produces the plates for the state. Gee, I thought they had that done in prisons. By the way, this idea has also been floated as a possibility in Illinois as well as Florida. Virginia's having a look at it. Corporatizing the plates to make license plates be advertisements for various companies. The story in USA Today focuses on Michael Coburn of Allen, Texas. He's been a REMAX real estate agent for 23 years, and so he was really excited when Texas offered a license plate with a REMAX logo on it. He got vanity plates even. For himself, he got Mr. REMAX. And for his wife, he got Mrs. REMAX. They appear on his Lexus and her Infiniti. He says it's already paid off because a potential customer selected him based upon his license plate. Everybody likes to show pride in their company, and it gets you business. Can you see where this might maybe go wrong? My Plate says they've sold more than 28,000 license plates. But what if you're somebody who got done wrong by the company? And you see, because this is a world where this kind of stuff, just a second. Multimedia broadcasting. This is the coming corporatization of America. Yeah, it starts with your license plate. But what's, hey, if it's good for your license plate, maybe you could sell ads on the side of your car or on the hood. Pretty soon we'll all be driving around in NASCAR. You want to wear the little NASCAR suit with all the patches on it? Oh, wait a minute. A bunch of you probably would. Would you buy, I don't care who you are, would you buy a corporate license plate wherever you are? Do you have any preference? I'm trying to think of a corporation I like. I'm kind of partial to Frank's Red Hot Hot Sauce. How about a hot sauce license plate? Or maybe you're a sales rep for Preparation H. How would you feel about driving around with a Preparation H license plate on your car? That's fun, huh? You might get a few looks. But, well, we'll deal with that, right? Where else could we put corporate advertising to try to make a little money for the state of Texas? Hey, maybe the state of Texas could require you to carry advertising as a function of you paying your property taxes on your car. You know, just a little magnetic ad. Brought to you by Hardin County. Brazos County. Brazos. I don't know. I get in trouble when I start trying to pronounce Texas names. Oh, the possibilities are endless. But you see, this is what you get. As a direct and proximate result of the Republican insistence that all taxation is bad. Because that's the Republican position. All taxation is bad. You know, all this foo-frah we're going to have coming up in the lame duck session, I wonder what would happen if President Obama announced that he simply wanted to take an income tax holiday for the next 2 years. Nobody making under $500,000 a year had to pay income taxes. What in heaven's name would the Republican Party do then? They'd kind of be in a corner, wouldn't they? Well, we said we were for tax cuts, but he's offering a tax go-away. Wait a minute, no money for 2 years? They wouldn't be able to cut our checks! Wait a minute! See, all these Republicans are going to come in and cut the deficit, and they're going to get rid of useless programs. Did you hear any of those teabagging candidates say that they wanted to cut their own salaries? Nah, neither did I. That's how you figure out that they're liars, because they are. Oh, this is all going to be very, very interesting. There's a genius out there. His name's Representative Tom Price of Georgia. Tom Price, he finally found something he wants to cut. He found him a useless federal government program, and he's going to cut it up. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about Tom useless government program cutting Price. When we come back from break, we got a break coming up. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where America comes to talk. 888-520-RICK. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Fox TV has quit reporting the news to become the news. To promote its corporate political agenda, Fox has surrendered any pretense of media integrity. Earlier this year, the far-right poobah of Fox, Rupert Murdoch, bolted from his journalistic hidey hole to donate $1 million from his corporate coffers to defeat Democrats running for Congress. He followed with another $1 million to elect Republican governors. Then came Proposition 24. A California ballot initiative to help stem that state's festering budget crisis by repealing nearly $2 billion in tax giveaways for big, hugely profitable out-of-state corporations. Unfortunately, Prop 24 failed, thanks in large part to an unprecedented, unethical push by Murdoch and his Fox minions to kill it. Among the biggest recipients of this special tax break was, guess who? Murdoch and Company. Rupert poured $1.3 million into the No on 24 campaign, but cash was not his sole weapon. He also deployed his Fox Business Network to carpet bomb the initiative. Just one of his so-called reporters broadcast 5 consecutive hours of live reports that repeatedly assailed the initiative in the last week of the election. Another Fox Business shill exploded into on-air hyperbole, declaring that Prop 24, quote, was setting up businesses to be destroyed, quite frankly. Frankly, Murdoch and his journalistic embarrassments don't know the meaning of frankness. For example, none of those involved bothered to inform viewers that Fox was a partisan with a direct conflict of interest in the issue. Astonishingly, a top network executive tried to claim innocence. "We didn't know," he cried. This is Jim Hightower saying, and these guys call themselves journalists? It's time for them to admit that they're just hired political hacks.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
Pay too much taxes, the poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
All you got to do is go to the Gospel of Supply Side Jeebus, and, you know, right there it is. Blessed are the cheesemakers. Blessed are the corporate accountants. Yeah, it's all there. Oh, wait a minute. No, it's not. Yeah, there's that whole problem with it is easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. But that's really not in the Conserva Bible, is it? No, not so much. I didn't think so. But before I get on my preaching soapbox, I better stop. Now, I want to go back to this story of Representative Tom Price of Georgia. He's a member of the House from Georgia, like I said. And he's all worried about the deficit and them useless spending programs. You're spending the government money, taxpayer dollars on useless programs. He's going to find him some because he's a good Republican. He's a budget deficit slashing Republican. Mm-hmm, yes. And they done found him one. Yep. Yep. Representative Tom Price of Georgia has decided he's going to go after the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Emergency Contingency Fund. Anything with a name like that can't be good now, can it? Needy families. We don't need no needy families. We don't need no stinking needy families. Now, never mind the fact that the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Emergency Contingency Fund created 250,000 jobs in 37 states. How did it do that? Well, it subsidized employment programs for low-income and unemployed workers. That allowed the companies who were hurting in the economic train wreck that was the Bush administration, that allowed them to keep workers on or to rehire workers who had been laid off or employ unemployed workers. 250,000 jobs in 37 states. Now, I don't do math on the fly a whole lot, but that's a lot of thousands of jobs in each and every individual state of those 37 by average. And Representative Tom Price of Georgia, he's the chairman of the Republican Study Committee. They study on that committee, them Republicans. He said the program encourages states to increase their welfare caseloads without requiring able-bodied individuals to work or get job training or make other efforts to move off of taxpayer assistance. And so they've targeted the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Emergency Contingency Fund. They're going to slash it. They're going to eliminate it. That's what they promised all them teabaggers, all them old pasty white people walking around with their teabags hanging off their hats and the misspelled signs. They promised that they're going to rein in that deficit. Mm-hmm. They're mad. Oh, they're real mad about that Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Emergency Contingency Fund that's giving all them useless welfare people all that perfectly good money that could be better spent being sent up to Wall Street. They're going to fix it. You're going to get it, right? There's only one problem with Representative Tom Price. It has to do with the fact that where most ordinary human beings have brains, he has some sort of sloshy, thin, gray settlings between his ears. And as a result of those sloshy, thin, gray settlings between his ears that he has instead of brains, he didn't realize, oopsie, that the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Emergency Contingency Fund it's expired. It doesn't exist anymore. For those Monty Python fans among you, it is pining for the fjords. It was funded at $5 billion for 2 years, and it ended on September the 30th, 2010. It's done. It's over. There's nothing left. It's gone. It is a former Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Emergency Contingency Fund. Now, see, I'm one of them crazy liberals. I think it might be a good idea for it to still be around because I'm pretty sure that here in the waning months and days and hours of 2010, we've probably still got needy families who are having emergencies. Might be handy to have that around, but no, we can't because we're going to tighten our belts and haul ourselves up by our bootstraps, and we're going to have family values. Even if it comes at the expense of, you know, needy families having emergencies. Pray louder, Christian. Your God can't hear you. That's the current motto from the Republican Party. But it doesn't exist. There's no more tenth. There's no money to save. All you're left with is a Repiglican who has once again proven the truth of Mark Twain's adage that it is better to be silent and thought a fool than to open one's mouth and prove it. Republican Representative Tom Price of Georgia. Dumber than a 10-pound bag of homemade stupid with 20 pounds of homemade stupid in it. But don't be surprised at that. Why would you? This wasn't a stealth campaign on the part of the Republican Party. They told America that they intended to come in and punish America for electing that brown man 2 years ago to the presidency. And by God, they're going to. The guys who created this problem can be trusted to solve it? In what universe is that a rational thought? The fact of the matter is, not much is going to change. The Republicans will propose absolutely insane policy and legal positions. And then we will have to find out if President Obama actually has the nerve to veto it. I mean, really, is this what the teabaggers voted for down in Georgia? Down in Georgia, Nathan Deal won the governor's race. He gave a right proper 10-point stomping to former Governor Roy Barnes. Now, during the whole campaign, he had to fight off a bunch of investigations and allegations of the fact that Nathan Deal is so crooked that when he finally dies, they will have to screw him into the dirt because they won't be able to bury him flat out. Now, he has released a list of the staffers who will comprise his transition team in Georgia. Did the teabaggers in Georgia know that they were voting to have the chairman of the board of the Georgia Public Policy Foundation leading Nathan Deal's transition team? Who's Rogers Wade? Well, Rogers Wade is one of those southern guys with two last names, or the last name and the first name reversed. In the normal world, his name would be Wade Rogers. But no, he's a southern man, so he's Rogers Wade. He's a senior partner in the public affairs firm of Eddington, Wade & Associates. He is a lobbyist for over half of the Fortune 100 companies from throughout the United States and Europe. That's some stroke. He's also a former vice president of Watkins Associated Industries. They have major holdings in transportation, development, seafood processing, insurance, and communication. That, by God, is a diverse portfolio. Now, that doesn't sound like somebody who'd be committed to restoring our Constitution, like the teabaggers were fond of saying, or taking our country back, as they also frequently said. But the same also applies to Pete Robinson. He's the chairman of the organization. They never, you know, these Republican organizations, they never sound like they actually do anything. Troutman Sanders Strategies. I can't tell if that's a organization that comes up with Sanders strategies for Troutman, or if it's an outfit that comes up with Troutman's strategies for Sanders. Oh, wait a minute. They're an Atlanta-based lobbying firm, so they don't actually do anything or make anything. They just sit there and suck money. Now, what do they do? what does Troutman Sanders Strategies do? Troutman Sanders Strategies, well, they focus their efforts on defeating lawsuits brought by working people who have been abused by their clients. Describing themselves, they say, the Troutman Sanders Labor and Employment Practice Group consists of more than 30 accomplished attorneys located in Atlanta, New York, Washington, D.C., Richmond, Chicago, Orange County, San Diego, Virginia Beach, and Raleigh offices. My gracious, they got more tentacles than an octopus. The L&E Group is fully equipped to provide counsel on virtually any labor and employment matter, including defending all types of individual and multi-plaintiff employment cases. That means it doesn't matter, Mr. Employer, whether you have ripped off one worker or 1,000, we'll defend you. And we will tell the world that them lazy, no-account, shiftless, layabout workers is just trying to get more free money from a hard-working small businessman like you. Troutman Sanders Labor and Employment Practice Group also said they defend complex class and collective actions. That's what happens when their client produces a product or has a process whereby lots of people get poisoned, some of them maybe to death. And Troutman Sanders' strategy will be there to say, well, why didn't they just move? We didn't poison nobody. And even if we did, we was only following orders. And they'll do that in Atlanta, New York, Washington, D.C., Richmond, Chicago, Orange County, California, San Diego, California, Virginia Beach, or Raleigh. It don't matter. Oh, looky. They also represent management in union elections, both in certification and decertification petitions. You know what that means, right? Means it doesn't matter whether they're trying to bring a union in or trying to throw the union out. Troutman Sanders is your boy. They can have meetings, you know, because we don't have any protections because we couldn't get the Employees Free Choice Act in the first 2 years of a democratically controlled Congress. And the president sort of lost interest in it, too. We couldn't get the Employee Free Choice Act in. So that means that to this day, it's okay. If maybe you want to get in your workplace and you take the time and the trouble to go around and set up an election, well, before that election comes, Troutman Sanders can help you set up meetings in which you bring your employees into a closed room, you compel them to be there, you tell them they will be fired if they don't come to the meeting, and then inside the room you quietly inform them that, by God, if they vote for that god-awful communist union, that they'll be out on the streets without a job before they can say Taft-Hartley. That's what that means. Negotiating and administering labor agreements. That's the classic case of looking for a loophole. Drafting employment policies, benefits plans, employment agreements, and severance plans. Severance plans. Here's your apple and your roadmap. Have a nice life. Conducting preventative training and compliance audits, including supervisory training to prevent union activity, harassment, and or retaliation. In other words, they will teach management how to perpetrate harassment and or retaliation within the meaning of the loosely interpreted labor laws. Does that just hang in your craw? Does that just make you just the teensiest, tiniest bit sick? The idea that the part of the transition team is going to be headed by, what was this creep's name? Pete Robinson. And he's engaged in the business of supervisory training to prevent union activity. Now, if you sniff out, you hear even so much as a word of anybody wanting to unionize and have living wages and health care and benefits in your company, Mr. Boss Man, you just call me. Call me Pete. and I'll get on the company jet, and I'll be there, and I'll have a whole team of people, and we'll have them people that won't think they want unions, we'll have them wetting themselves at the very thought of signing a ballot in favor of organizing their workplace. Oh, we know how. We've seen The Godfather, horse's head in a bed. That's child's play. We'll just explain to them that if they unionize, they're going to get fired, and then their children will starve. That's much more effective than any horse's head, don't you know? Yeah, that is that's another member of Nathan Deal of Georgia's transition team, Pete Robinson. Then there's Joe Tanner. Joe Tanner is the president, oddly enough, of Joe Tanner and Associates. Joe Tanner and Associates is another organization that does nothing, makes nothing, except peddles influence for corporate clients like Wellstar Health System and Georgia Power. By the way, you youngins got any breathing problem, maybe a little asthma? Georgia Power is filthy with coal-fired power plants. And that's part of why we have an asthma pandemic in this country today. Then there's Monty Vesey. My God, it just sounds like you want to... I'm going to go talk to Monty Vesey out on the veranda. Monty Vesey. The Center for Public Integrity calls him a hired gun. He zipped through the rotating, the revolving door between the Georgia legislature and private business so quick that the door plumb near spun off its hinges. He's a hired gun who lobbies on behalf of the Georgia Industrial Loan Association and Kraft Foods, among a number of other clients. Monte Vesey. What a name. This is the Georgia governor's transition team. Even though Nathan Deal down in Georgia has spent a whale of a load of time attacking those Washington politicians, you know, that always plays well out with sticks, he went and hired him a D.C. lobbyist. Remember Pete Robinson? Yeah. Rob Lieberne is also a lobbyist with Troutman Sanders Strategies, where they strategize for sanding Troutman. And then finally there's Dan Lee, another hired gun. Oh, look, Dan Lee has been a hired gun for Corrections Corporation of America. Motto, let's put some more people in prison. This is good business. United Healthcare, oh, there's a bunch of friendly folks. Goldman Sachs, oh, the teabaggers just love Goldman Sachs, don't they? And finally, New South Energy, polluting the New South with dirty old coal. But fear not, the Deal campaign has said that none of our transition team members are going to engage in any lobbying activities while they're working for the governor-elect. Yeah, you believe that? Because if and you do, I've got a lovely piece of swampland in the middle of the Arizona desert that I'd love to talk to you about maybe purchasing. So the question persists. Is this what the teabaggers voted for? There are a lot of these questions out there. Did the teabaggers who went out and stomped people's heads in the name of Rand Paul, stomped a woman's head? Would they have stomped that woman's head if they knew that he was going to start turn into a liar right off the bat? Because you know, Rand Paul, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Rand Paul, if you want to know why I refer to him as such, you need to go to YouTube, and you can find a video there. Just search the words Atlas Duct, Atlas Duct, on YouTube, and you'll find out why he is Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. It's because he wants to be comfortably well off. Rand Paul is, in fact, Daffy Duck. Rand Paul campaigned on the idea that he was gonna end earmarks. You know, those nasty, evil earmarks that the Republicans have howled and squealed about. And basically, it was the howling and squealing that hogs make when they don't have their front trotters in the trough and want to put them there, but others are there before them. That's what they meant, really. But that's not what they were saying to the teabaggers. They said they wanted to end earmarks. Right? Yeah. Only no. Now that he's done being elected a senator from Kentucky, and elected by hollering about earmarks and how he's going to end earmarks, and earmarks had to go, and how he was so mad about photo lawmakers with photo op, this is his words, photo ops with oversized fake cardboard checks. He said, I will dismantle the culture of professional politicians, and I don't care if it ruffles a lot of establishment feathers while I'm doing it. Oh, bless him. He's a man of the people, isn't he? Oh, I want to sing. No, not so much. Election day is only a week gone by, and Rand Paul has already told what his teabagging followers can do with his no earmarks pledge. He has already said he's committed to fight for Kentucky's share of earmarks and federal pork. Because he's not that crazy of a libertarian. If you just crack your window open and you stick your ears outside, that silence you hear, yeah, that's the silence of the teabaggers. Because they're really not smart enough or sharp enough to realize that they've just been sold a ticket to this way to the egress. He continued on by saying, I will advocate for Kentucky's interests. Oh, Jesus, it's precious, isn't it? Yeah, it didn't even make it through an interview with Christiana Monfort. And what about earmarks? Would you say no to earmarks? No, no more earmarks. No more? Not even in your state? No, no, no. But I do tell people within Kentucky, as I say, look, I'll argue within the committee process for things that are good for Kentucky that they want within the context of a balanced budget. In other words, yes, earmarks. Only I'm going to tell them no earmarks. Right? Yeah. So we've come to the first hour of the Rick Smith Show, and you are welcome to join in any way that you choose, either by email to bobkincaid@gmail.com, jump into the chat room at headonradionetwork.com, or call in at 888-520-RICK, 888-520-7425, and we will be back on the other side of the top of the hour. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where America comes to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News, I'm Doug Cunningham. U.S. Steel is in a showdown with workers regarding contract demands, Jesse Russell reports.
U.S. Steel has locked out nearly 1,000 workers in Hamilton, Ontario. The workers have been trying to reach an agreement with the company since their contract expired in July of this year. After union leadership rejected a recent contract offer and made a counteroffer to the company, U.S. Steel chose to lock the workers out instead. The company wants a new contract to close the current benefits plan to new employees and replace it with a defined contribution retirement plan. The company has also made demands regarding the cost of living formula. The workers have been shut out of the plant since 7 p.m. on Sunday. The shutout comes as the Canadian government is taking U.S. Steel to court, alleging that the company has failed to meet employment and production goals it agreed to when it took over Stelco 3 years ago.
Republicans who swept into office November 2nd in state houses and governor's mansions nationwide are determined to do all they can to kill job creation projects funded by President Obama's economic stimulus. Wisconsin is a case in point. GOP Governor-elect Scott Walker is vowing to kill an $810 million high-speed rail project between Milwaukee and the state capital of Madison and thousands of jobs that go along with it. Work is already underway, and killing it next year would mean costing Wisconsin millions of dollars. Robert Craig is executive director of Wisconsin Citizen Action.
People were not voting in order to reduce jobs, reduce investments in the Wisconsin economy, and do things that cost us money in the process. I don't think there's any mandate to do that. To actually cost the state millions and millions of dollars just to get out of this project, just to service ideology and to service a campaign pledge is, as we've been saying, it's economic treason.
Craig says the project would create 4,732 construction jobs and another 9,570 permanent jobs. Annual maintenance costs for the rail line would be just $750,000. Another Republican governor, Christie in New Jersey, recently killed a $3 billion federally funded rail tunnel project between New Jersey and New York.
There are already other governors lining up to say that they will take the money. The new governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, says we'd love to create more family-supporting jobs for New Yorkers and we'll take the money if Wisconsin's going to turn it down.
Times have been turbulent for the airline industry, but some U.S. Airways workers who were recently furloughed could find themselves back in the jump seat. The airline said it plans to hire new employees and recall some furloughed workers. Due to attrition and planned retirements, the airline is in need of 420 flight attendants and 80 pilots by July 2011. If the company meets its goals, that means all currently furloughed flight attendants will be back on the job. However, it will leave nearly 100 pilots still waiting in the wings. The announcement follows a similar announcement by American Airlines, which is in the process of taking a combined 800 flight attendants and pilots off of furlough. This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association, the NEA, working for great public schools for every student. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Rick is taking some needed time away, and I'm happy to be in his chair, at least remotely, this evening. My name is Bob Kincaid, and we're coming to you live from the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful, almost level West by God, Virginia, where something around 3.5 million pounds of high explosives go off around us every day, so that less than 5% of the coal that is needed to provide the less than 45% of electricity that coal generates in this country can be sold at a massive profit, so that Don Blankenship can get a little bit richer, because Don hasn't yet figured out, nor has any other coal executive, that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses. You can't take it with you. I got something I want to share with you here. It's from a brilliant man by the name of Tim Wise. It's his thoughts on the recent election. And I think it's quite compelling, really. Tim Wise, the last gasp of aging white power, but time is not on your side. Tim Wise writes, for all y'all rich folks, enjoy that champagne or whatever fancy scotch you drink. And for all y'all a little bit lower on the economic scale, enjoy your Pabst Blue Ribbon or whatever lousy beer you favor. Whatever the case and whatever your economic situation, know this. You need to drink up, and quickly, and heavily, because your time is limited, real limited. So party while you can, but mind the increasingly loud clock ticking away in the corners of your consciousness, the clock that reminds you how little time you and yours have left. Not much more now. Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. I know you think you've taken your country back with this election, and of course you have always thought it was yours for the taking, because that's what we white folks are bred to believe, that it's ours, and how dare anyone else say otherwise. But you are wrong. You have won a small battle in a larger war, the meaning of which you do not remotely understand. Because there is nothing even slightly original about you. There have always been those who wanted to take the country back. There were those who, in past years, wanted to take the country back to a time of enslavement and indentured servitude, but they lost. There were those who wanted to take us back to a time when children could be made to work in mines and factories, when workers had no legal rights to speak of, when the skies in every major city were heavy with industrial that would gather on sidewalks and windowsills like volcanic ash. But they lost. There were those who wanted to take us back to a time when women could not vote or attend any but a few colleges or get loans in their own names or start their own businesses. But they lost. There were those who wanted to take us back to a time when blacks had no rights that the white man was bound to respect. That's a quote. This being the official opinion of the Supreme Court before those awful days of judicial activism now decried by the likes of you, and when people of color could legally be kept from voting solely because of race or holding certain jobs or living in certain neighborhoods or run out of other towns altogether when the sun would go down or be strung up from the trees. But they lost. And you will lose. So make a note of it. Tweet it to yourself. Put it on your Facebook wall and leave it there so you'll remember that I told you so. It is coming, and soon. This isn't hubris. It isn't ideology. It is not wishful thinking. It is math. Not even advanced math. Just simple, basic, like third grade math. The kind of math that proves how your kind, mostly older white folks, beholden to an absurd, inaccurate, nostalgic fantasy of what America used to be like, are dying. You're like the bad guy in every horror movie ever made who gets shot 5 times or stabbed 10 or blown up twice and who will eventually pass. Even if it takes 4 sequels to make it happen, but who, in the meantime, keeps coming back around, grabbing at our ankles as we walk by. We have been mistakenly convinced that you were finally dead this time. Fair enough, and have at it. But remember how this movie ends. Our ankles survive. You do not. Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, Jason, and that jerk husband in that movie with Julia Roberts who tracks her down after she runs away and changes her identity. They are all done. Even that crazy Joker in Saw is about to be finished off for good. Granted, he's going to be popping out in some 3D stuff to scare the kiddies, so he isn't going quietly, but he's going, as all bad guys eventually do. And in the pantheon of American history, old white people have pretty much always been the bad guys. The keepers of the hegemonic and reactionary flame, the folks unwilling to share the category of American with others on equal terms. Fine. Keep it up. It doesn't matter. Because you're on the endangered list. And unlike, say, the bald eagle or some exotic species of muskrat, you are not worth saving. In 40 years or so, maybe fewer, there won't be any more white people around who actually remember that Leave It to Beaver, Father Knows Best, Opie Taylor down at the fishing hole, corn pone garbage that you hold so near and dear to your heart. There won't be any more white folks around who think the 1950s were the good old days, because there won't be any more white folks around who actually remember them. And so, therefore, we'll be able to teach about them accurately and honestly without hurting your precious feelings or those of the so-called greatest generation, a bunch whose white members were, by and large, a gaggle of miscreants who helped save the world from fascism, only to return home and oppose the ending of it here by doing nothing to lift a finger on behalf of the civil rights struggle. So to hell with you and all who revere you. By then, half the country will be black or brown, and there is nothing you can do about it. Nothing, Senor Tancredo. Nothing, Senora Engel, or Senora Brewer, or Senor Beck. Lo tiene muy mal, hijo de puta. And by then, you will have gone all in as a white nationalist movement. Well, you've all but done that now, thus guaranteeing that the folks of color and even a decent-sized minority of us white folks will be able to crush you election after election from the presidency on down to the eighth-grade student council. Like I said, this is math, baby, and numbers don't lie. Bottom line, this too shall pass. So enjoy your tax cuts a while longer. Go buy whatever you people buy when your taxes get cut. A new car or two, a bigger house, an island, whatever. Go back to trading your derivatives, engaging in rampant financial speculation that produces nothing of value, that turns the whole world into your personal casino. Whatever. Play your hand, and for the love of God, play it big, real big, as in shoot for the moon big, as in try to privatize Social Security and health care and everything else, whatever. At least that way, everyone will be able to see what you're really about. We've been trying to tell them, but nothing beats seeing it with your own eyes, so go big or go home, Bubba. Get her done, cowboy up, or whatever other idiotic catchphrase strikes your fancy. Just promise you'll do more than talk this time. Please, or as one of your celluloid heroes might put it, make my day. Do whatever you gotta do, but remember that those who are the victims of your greed and indifference take the long view. They know, but you do not, that justice is not for the sprinters, but rather for the long-distance runners who will be hitting their second wind right about the time that you collapse from exhaustion. They are like the tortoise to your hare. They're like the San Francisco Giants to your New York Yankees, a bunch that loses year after year after year until they finally win. You've had this confidence before, remember? You thought you'd secured your position permanently after the overthrow of Reconstruction in the wake of the Civil War, after the elimination of the New Deal, after the Reagan Revolution, after the Republican electoral victory of 1994. And yet, they who refuse to die are still here. Because those who have lived on the margins, who've been abused, maligned, targeted by austerity measures and budget cuts, subjected to racism, classism, sexism, straight supremacy, and every other form of oppression, always know more about their abusers than the abusers know about their victims. They have to study you, to pay careful attention, to adjust their body armor accordingly, and to memorize your sleep patterns. You, on the other hand, need know nothing whatsoever about them, and this will surely prove fatal to you in the end, for it means you will not know their resolve, will not fear it as you should. It means we'll take their greatest strength, perseverance, and make of it a weakness called losing. But what you forget, or more to the point, never knew, is that those who lose know how to lose, which is to say they know how to lose with dignity. And those who suffer know how to suffer, which is to say they know how to survive, a skill that is in short supply amid the likes of you. You who could not survive the thought of minimal health care reform, or financial regulation, or a marginal tax rate equal to that which you paid just 10 years earlier, perhaps are under the illusion that everyone is as weak as you, as soft as you, as akin to petulant children as you are, as unable to cope with the smallest setback, the slightest challenge to the way you think your country should look and feel and operate. But surprise, they are not. And they know how to regroup and plot and plan, and they're planning even now. We are your destruction. And I do not mean by that your physical destruction. We don't play those games. We're not into the whole Second Amendment remedies, militia, armed resistance garbage that your side fetishizes. Because, see, we don't have to be. We don't need guns. We just have to be patient and wait for your hearts to stop. Beating. And stop they will. And for some of you, real soon, truth be told. Do you hear it? Do you hear it? The sound of your empire dying? Your nation knew it? Ending permanently? Because I do. And the sound of its demise is beautiful. So know this. If you thought this election was payback for 2008, remember, payback, thy name is temporary. Tim Wise, the last gasp of aging white power. The time is not on your side. And they're not. They're not. It is really just math. It is factual. It doesn't matter how many old, tired, hate-filled, pasty-faced, doughy bigots show up for how many pasty-faced, doughy, white-faced bigot rallies. It doesn't matter. Because math, well, math wears down bigots like water inexorably wears down rocks. And they do lose. Because it's not going to take that much longer before the white power structure in this country comes collapsing to the ground like the proverbial house built on shifting sands. You know, when Thomas Jefferson accomplished the Louisiana Purchase, which literally tripled the size of the United States in the space of a night, he wrote, "We have created room for the American Republic to expand unto the thousandth generation." You know, we lionize and heroize Thomas Jefferson, as in many ways we rightly should, but he missed the boat on that one. Thousandth generation? Not even to the hundredth. And all of those people of indeterminate color, a good friend of mine once said that he looked forward to the day when America, when all of America looked like a little bit of cream in a whole lot of coffee. Because then we might get over our national sickness of racism. This is not to say that there aren't dictators, that there aren't thugs, that there aren't murderers of different skin colors around the world. One would be a fool to think that. But we're talking about the United States, and we're talking about the final accounting of right and wrong in this country that has been a long time coming. And come, it will. You know, frankly, you'd probably have to search around the internet a little bit to find a picture of me if you haven't already. I'm pretty white. I mean, I get a sunburn under the refrigerator light bulb, okay? I mean, I'm white. Not quite Johnny and Edgar Winter white, but white. Pale pink. I'm Scots-Irish. It's where I come from. There was not a whole lot of call for a whole bunch of melanin in our skin over the last 20,000 years. But you know what? In later years, it hasn't served us well. My family has this ugly habit of getting skin cancers from living in a climate for the last 8 or 9 generations where we're not suited to live. It's just science. It's okay, little teabaggers. Don't be afraid of it. Embrace it. Because science and nature don't hold any love for you. They're neutral. Adapt or die. And Tim Wise is wise. And correct. Some of you within the sound of my voice will live to see this world. I hope to. Like I said, it don't get much paler than me, and my lovely wife Agnes is pretty pale too, her being a redhead and all. I got this weakness for redheads. Not the trouble. But it's the kind of trouble you love. But somewhere down the line, I know. I don't guess. I don't think. I don't surmise. I don't wonder. I know that we're going to get more adaptable to the hot, hot suns in which we live. Because it's just the way the human race works. It's just what has to happen if we want to continue to live on the planet. See, those white people that Tim Wise was talking about, well, they've screwed up everything to the point that they've screwed up the climate system of the planet itself. And yes, I know the teabaggers don't believe that either. But this ain't a believing thing. This ain't church on Sunday. This is reality. Reality spoken here. And they don't get to believe climate change away. And it's not the third act of Peter Pan. And if they just believe hard enough, Tinkerbell is not going to come back. And if she does, she's liable to have a pretty doggone good tan. This is not the stuff of the heart. This is the stuff of the mind. And it's an open question. Nobody is forcing. There is no compulsion for these tired, aging, pasty, doughy, white people with the tea bags hanging off their hats and their misspelled signs. There's nobody compelling them to come to reality. But there are some of us who are their neighbors and their friends, and we're begging them. We're begging them. Come with us. It'll be okay. You don't have to live in fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death. And you don't have to live that way. You can love the rest of your country the way so many of us in this country want to love you. We joke a lot about the so-called left and liberals wanting to sing Kumbaya, but the fact of the matter is, we do. We want to hold hands. We want to march. We want to walk. We want to sing. And we want to share the majesty of what America can be instead of the hate-infused specter that it has so plainly become. We yearn to do that. We yearn to do that. Let's go to the phones. You know the number, right? 888-520-RICK. 888-520-7425. We've got Karen from California. Hey, Karen.
Hello, Bob. I want you to know that I really, I'm sorry, I'm hearing echo on my end. I hope you don't hear it on yours.
I don't. You're doing fine.
Okay. I enjoyed that essay that you read, and it gave me some hope. We don't have to live like this. What I want to speak to you about is, you know, the fact that the youth in our country did not come out in huge numbers to vote. And the pasty white people did, you know. I think that they didn't vote this time because they felt let down or that they weren't interested in the measures in their particular counties that meant something to them. They didn't vote, but they're going to. They are going to get active. Very soon down the road, they're going to see that their education, the money they have paid for their educational costs to go to college, has not paid off. They can't find jobs. The kids who are now 18 are competing with people who are in their 50s for service jobs. I think that the young people are the answer. They're going to have to wake up.
I think that you're right in large part. Stand by just a minute, and I think Brett may be able to try to take the echo away, maybe. But anyway, I think you're right about the youth vote. The youth, they didn't show up like they showed up in 2008, but I've read some statistical analysis that suggests that they did show up like they showed up in 2006. They showed up like kids show up in, and I'm sorry about saying kids, young adults. They showed up like they show up in off-year elections. It wasn't that shocking, but the fact of the matter is, you're absolutely right. They have not yet learned that it is in fact their ox being gored. And I'll add one more factor in for you. And I really appreciate the call. There's another factor coming into this, and that is that it's our fault that we forget how long it takes to do movement building, Karen. And by that, what I mean is that if you go back and read the history of the Vietnam conflict, there was already a movement building against the Vietnam conflict before we were calling it a Vietnam conflict. There was movement building going on before the Summer of Love of 1968 or 67. and into 68. But things like the Tet Offensive, when Walter Cronkite said, you know, we can't win this thing, that is what crystallized it. But even then, it took another five long, painful, blood-soaked years for it to happen. But during those 5 years, a certain generation of this country, who now find themselves being 60-somethings or late 50-somethings, realized that it was theirs that was on the line.
Yes.
And they got out into the streets and they protested.
Yes. Yes. Now, Bob, and, I want to tell you. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I don't want to disturb your train of thought. Go ahead.
Well, no. I was merely going to say that if these filthy right-wingers get their way, they're still trying to figure out a way. See, their problem is they're trying to figure out ways to run wars on volunteer armies when it's just about impossible to do.
Right.
We have not yet begun to reap the whirlwind that we sowed with Iraq and Afghanistan. What is it, 100,000 veterans who have been maimed by those wars? And we're not going to have the money to take care of them, and we've got Republicans talking about privatizing the VA. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. This is a subject that really just wrenches at my soul. I do want you to know that the whole time that over the last 4 years that Bush was in office, I was out on the street as part of the anti-war movement, and I did counter-recruitment at high schools. My own sons at that time, my youngest right now, just turned 18. The oldest turned 26. And I can't understand why they have not followed in suit with me. They seem, because they are not economically challenged, we were able to send our kid, you know, one kid to college, the other one is going to go to college, but they seem removed from the fact that there are people who are, this is an economic graft. They don't get it. And I just am sick that so many young people either feel that they are removed from it, or if they know that they're not removed from it, they don't have anywhere to turn. I'm telling you, Bob, when President Obama was elected, that's when activism in my area shut off as far as anti-war activism. It just shut off. I think we were waiting to see what was going to happen. We thought that if we continued to hold his feet to the fire, things would change. But now here we are, 2 years later, and now we've got the GOP who has the majority of the Congress, and the Democrats don't have much in the Senate.
Karen, if I can interrupt just for a minute with a couple of points.
Yes, please do.
One, the military strategy for getting for this economic draft that you rightly reflect upon is very closely drawn. If your kids go to school in any kind of a respectable school district, they're not going to see the recruiters nearly as much as a kid who goes to school in the barrio, or a kid who goes to school in the sticks like mine do. My son is not 15 years old yet, and he's already being approached by recruiters because there's nothing for him here, and they know it. And most of the boys here, there's nothing, or the women, there's nothing for them here. There are only a limited number of jobs available for boys who want to go and learn how to blow up mountains and poison communities. It's a handful of jobs. And beyond that, nothing. Minimum wage work. It is literally a fertile field for the reaping of human flesh for the war machine.
That's
and it's
right.
The same thing in depressed ethnic school districts, whether it be Latino or African American, and it's deliberate. And I will be.
I agree.
I got to the point with my son where I said, "Listen, if that's something you want to do, and you know, I can't tell him completely no, and maybe that's not good liberal on my part, But I can't tell him completely no, because our whole family history, we being Scots-Irish and everything, is nothing but going and fighting somebody else's wars. And so what I said to him is, if you want to, that's fine. And there's one way you're going to do it that I'll sit still for, and that is if you bring home straight A's and you go to you go to the Naval Academy or the Coast Guard Academy, not the Air Force Academy or West Point. But you are not going to sign up and go in as meat.
Right.
Now the other thing that I wanted to bring to your attention is that because they're still trying to carry out these wars on a volunteer basis that they can't afford to pay for, sooner or later they're going to run up against it, and they're going to have a draft. And the minute that they have a draft, you know, if a kid wants to get student loans, a male, we still haven't included the women in this, but if a young male wants to get student loans, he has to prove that he has gone to the post office and registered for the draft. But, you know, that's out of sight, out of mind. When you start seeing lottery numbers come out, then it gets a whole bunch more real.
Yes, this is when the white pasty people start waking up, right? When their kids are
right.
being fed into the fodder. That's when they will wake up. But right now, it's just fine to take the economically challenged people, you know, fine. Go ahead and go. We don't care. Just go. We're not going to pay attention to these immoral and illegal wars. And by the way, Bush, that book he has coming out is got me cringing. I'm sure that
decision
pants. I am just like livid.
Well, and you know, you said something, Karen, about the fact that the anti-war movement just blew away with the inauguration of Barack Obama, and that's the absolute truth. And I am even guilty of a little bit of that. Because I wanted to think that he was going to get us out of Iraq, and, you know, he sort of did a half-hearted attempt at that. But there is a lot of guilt to go around Democrats, liberals, and progressives, Karen, because we heard him say before we elected him that that Afghanistan was the right war.
Yes.
When most of us, at least I think you and I, and most of the folks listening online, knew that it was as much or more of a nightmare than anything Iraq could ever have nightmarishly dreamed of being.
Yes, you're right, Bob. We knew that. But we had a choice again. McCain, Obama. Now, of course, everybody goes back to, oh, my gosh, if only somebody like Kucinich had succeeded, this country would be a different place today. Just like we go back and say, oh, my gosh, if only Al Gore. So I think we've got to get busy. We've got some time. If the Democrats don't put up I just have to say I do believe, unfortunately, that President Obama is going to be a one-term president. I think that he had good goals, but I think that the cabinet that he chose, the people around him, destroyed his presidency, and I think it's too late.
One man, Karen, Rahm Emanuel.
I agree. And Larry Sumner.
But let me point out one difference between Barack Obama and the one-term presidency of Jimmy Carter. You know, and I know you're familiar with my work. You know that I'm one of the few people who never walked away from Jimmy Carter, who insisted that Jimmy Carter was a good president and would be viewed much more favorably by history than that greasy old B-movie actor Ronald Reagan. Well, taking that into account, Ronald Reagan had run for the Republican presidential nomination in 1976 against Gerald Ford. He had a machine already in place, and he was pretty much the acknowledged front runner. I mean, there were some others. You know, George H.W. Bush was out there calling trickle-down economics, voodoo economics. I remember it well. You probably do, too. But it was nearly a coronation. It wasn't that close in the race for the Republican nomination for Ronald Reagan. The one thing that Barack Obama has in his favor right now is the fact that there is no obvious 2012 frontrunner. And there are a lot of, but it also scares me to death, Karen, that there are a lot of Democrats who are saying, because we're really good at this, let's just sit back and watch them tear themselves to pieces. Because even though they do that, what we forget is that the Republican Party is incredibly good at coming together and becoming monolithic almost overnight. It doesn't matter who their nominee is. If they nominate Gumby, by the next morning after the nominating convention is over, will be the last great American standing, and America can't live without President Gumby. And you know I'm right, right?
I know you're right, and this should give people listening some hope. I was listening to our friend Mike Malloy and listening to you at the same time. I'm sorry, I just went back and forth because I knew
God,
you were on.
That's got to be a nightmare.
Well, yeah, sort of. But he did have Laura Flanders on his program night, and she has a new book out. But her comment on Mike's show was that she's concerned that the right wing has become the activists, whereas it used to be the people on the left, the progressive liberals, were the activists. And that it's just as you just said, the people on the left seem to be standing aside saying, okay, let's see what happens. I think it's time that we get active again. I think it's time that we get active again. I don't, you know, whether it's behind the Democratic Party, I personally have a hard time with that. I'm looking more toward the hope of building a strong third party, and I've been saying this since before President Obama was elected, once I knew that Kucinich was out of the race. That's just my personal opinion.
And I understand it. I understand the impulse. I voted for a third-party candidate in the Senate race here in West Virginia, as you probably know.
Oh, well, I don't blame you.
I couldn't stomach the two Republicans.
I love him. Oh, my gosh. You play, that's Mr. Johnson, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And I've heard him speak, and I like him. I saw that he's very well there.
He's a fine man. There are institutional problems with having success as a third party that I don't know. Well, it's always been my contention that there will never actually be a viable third party in this country, Karen,
because a viable third party
becomes the second party and the second party dies.
I know. It's a split vote. But, Bob, don't you think that creating a strong third party would be better than the civil war that we have going on in this country right now? We don't want to admit it, but we are like half and half right now.
I think you're right, Karen, but the problem lies in the institutional ability of the two major parties to co-opt ideas, and it's nothing new. In the 30s proposed massive social changes and wealth redistribution and was a genuine political threat to Franklin Roosevelt. And that's the reason that his ideas got co-opted and watered down and turned into Social Security. Democrats and Republicans alike do this kind of thing. And my suggestion, humbly offered, is that we instead look at what the right wing has done and learn from the stuff that they've done that we can morally and conscientiously co-opt ourselves. And that is issue-based advocacy.
Well, yes, and they are actually copying what we have done, as liberals, as progressives, as people on the left. They are actually copying what we have done, and so we need to get back to our roots and counter the right. However,
well, I was very fortunate, Karen, in that I got to see something in the birthing at the end of September that was truly stunning in its consequences and in its scope. I was there in person for Appalachia Rising in Washington, D.C., and I watched 115 liberals and progressives, people who are on the same side of the ideological divide as the president, at least theoretically, sit down in an act of mass civil disobedience and get arrested in front of the White House. That was more profound to me than what happened at the John Stewart rally. And it was as or more profound to me than what happened the following Saturday with the big liberal progressive rally on the Mall in Washington, D.C., because these were committed people who absolutely refused to take orders from the top down and instead built a protest and demonstration movement that was truly, truly, honest to goodness, grassroots. And in watching that development, Karen, I saw hope. Because there's no way that those folks were going to go run off and vote Republican. They have an issue, and they know which side of the political spectrum is most likely to give them some help on that issue. And they understand the difference, and this is perhaps most importantly, they understand the difference between a mugwump blue dog and a real FDR-style progressive liberal Democrat.
And I hope that President Obama saw that. And I guess another thing that we have to be thankful for is that many of those blue dog Democrats were voted out. So we're just going to be patient and see what happens.
Remember, so many of those blue dogs were in the South. And it will take maybe another generation to turn the South around. And that's why it's so important that we do support our Southern liberals. They're gloating. The Republicans are gloating in the South right now. The head of the Republican Party in Alabama recently tweeted or Facebooked or blogged or something that the Democratic Party in Alabama, as we know it, is dead.
Well, Bob, you got to keep doing what you're doing. Because, I hope that people will become part of the Thrifty 250, because we need your voice. We have limited resources. We do not have the mass media. The mass media right now is not reporting the news. They're not giving any news about a progressive voice. The rally that you spoke about at the White House, was that on the news? I don't think so.
No.
So we've got to just keep spreading the word. What we have are independents like you getting the word out, and we need to spread the message and support the effort. I'll let you go, and it was such a privilege to talk to you. I admire
it was an absolute joy, Karen. I hope to hear from you again.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Take care
and good night.
Bye now. And that is Karen calling from California with, and these are the kind of wide-ranging conversations that I love. Because as liberals, look, if you tune in to right-wing radio, and by the way, an interesting news story coming out of Seattle today, right-wing radio died a horrible death in Seattle today. Beautiful. The absolute standing flagship of liberal talk in Seattle, Washington, called it quits today. They carried Limbaugh. They carried Hannity. They carried that god-awful creature with a voice made for print named Mark Levin. Right-wingers wall to wall. And they're gone. It's over. They're done. They have switched to, hey, you tuned away hate casting, but now we're going to bring you some classic rock. Here's the Eagles and Take It Easy. Really? That means... But the fact of the matter is, if you spend any time, and most of you don't, except for people running up and down I-81 or sitting there wishing I would play some country music, you don't listen to right-wing talk. But if you were to, and I actually advise that you do sometimes, don't, and for all the respect that I maintain for Media Matters and Crooks and Liars and Think Progress and folks like that, and my respect is profound and genuine, you cannot get the sense of what right-wing hate casting is like until you have sat and listened to a couple of hours of it, until it feels like your brains are going to leak out of your toenails. You just can't. Because it's organized, It's codified. It's authoritarian. It's single issue. It's bumper sticker language. It's marching orders. Well, we're liberals. We don't do marching orders very well. And broadcasting that is done on the right-wing model can never be truly liberal. That's why what I do on the Internet, I call conversation radio, and what we've spent literally years trying to cultivate. The idea that there is a national discussion to be had in this country that we are not having. We liberals, we progressives, we decent human beings. So, when you listen to how the right organizes its people, you must understand that we can never organize the same way. It must be broad-based, and it must be conscientious of diversity and divergence of opinion. There are some cases where we do have to get together and do some marching, and we have proven that we can. There were more people on the mall in Washington, D.C., for the progressive rally by far than there were pasty-faced, old, doughy, white people with tea bags hanging off their hats and poorly spelled T-shirts because Glenn Beck told them to leave their signs at home. And, yes, the people who showed up for the John Stewart rally were three times what Glenn Beck got. We can do things. We really can. But we will have to do them on our own. And I suppose that's my thesis. We will have to do them on our own. Why? Because we don't begin to have the top-down infrastructure or the money, as Karen noted, that the right wing does. We saw literally enough millions of dollars poured into the right-wing campaign to retake the government this past Tuesday, a week ago. We saw enough money poured into that to rebuild schools, to pay decent teacher salaries. We saw money enough poured into that to provide health care to sick children. I got sick children health care story in the next hour. Oi. Welcome to the world the teabaggers have created. They poured all that money in, and it probably wasn't half of the money that was available to them because frankly, the right wing has a printing press. We do not have that top-down infrastructure that they have. What we do, we will do $5 at a time and $10 at a time and $100 at a time and $200 at a time and every once in a while, $1,000 at a time. That's how we'll do it. But that's okay, because we don't have to have, as my colleague and friend Rick Smith has noted on this program, we don't have to have $200,000 tour party buses with slickety paint jobs on the outside. We're okay getting there in a banged-up panel van, because we care more about who's inside it than the sticker price. This can be done. But we've got to do some teaching, we as the grassroots. That's why I brought up Appalachia Rising, which remains one of the signal honors of my life for having allowed my participation. That's why I bring it up. Because that was a grassroots, really grassroots, operation in which the grassroots organizers told people higher up in what little bit of infrastructure that we have on this side, we told them what we plan to do and then said, help us fund it. If that had been a right-wing operation, there would have been millions of dollars. As it was, we got it done, but just barely. We have to teach, for instance, in the environmental movement, we have to teach the big greens how to help people on the ground in the grassroots. the human rights organizations, whether they be for marriage equity or for women's rights or reproductive choice, have got to be taught how to support people on the ground who are doing the grunt labor. Because the labor organizations have to be taught by the rank and file how to organize in their particular communities. Because there is no such thing as a one-size-fits-all strategy for liberals and progressives. That's why we're liberals and progressives, for God's sakes. Whenever you hear people talk about organizing liberals and progressives, inevitably they will mention the metaphor of herding cats across a parking lot. Well, the fact of the matter is, if you open up a few cans of chicken of the sea, you can get those cats' cooperation for at least a little bit of time. What we're talking about, more realistically, is wrangling butterflies. Because that is our weakness as liberals. We want to just flutter off in our own direction. And every direction that every butterfly flutters off in is valid and real. But lineality is our downfall because we think we have to go straight to the source. When in fact, multidimensional way the heck out there geometry and physics will tell you that there are other ways to get there quicker than a straight line. You got to get all non-Euclidean though, and I can't even begin it. But you get my point. The butterflies have value, and sometimes butterflies go to places that don't make sense to people watching the butterflies. To this day, I don't think we can quite translate the pollen dance that a bee does upon returning to the hive after having found a great supply of pollen. But every bee gets there perfectly efficiently. They don't fly straight lines. We can do this. We can even change the tenor of the Obama administration. But it has to happen in grassroots groups that instruct the money people how to spend it, because it is so limited. Do you see? Does this make sense? You know, the Obama administration, or the Obama campaign back in 2008, had everyone convinced that it was really a grassroots, bottom-up, not top-down movement. It never was. It was the appearance of that. We have yet, and see, this is the important thing for everybody who gets a little disheartened when they think back to what happened last Tuesday. We have yet, as liberals and progressives, to flex our muscles. Shoot. We put an avowed, moderate, right-of-center president in office, and even that scared the living bejabbers out of the pasty-faced, doughy white people. Because he was a right-of-center brown person, and it still wasn't enough. Because nothing is ever enough for the right wing. They want it all. Have that tattoo on your arm so you can look down and see it every day. They want it all. Coming to you live, I'm Bob Kincaid, sitting in for Rick Smith. This is the Rick Smith Show, where America comes to talk. We'll be back.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEO Shippensburg.
If you're injured at work, do you think you need an attorney? You probably don't. To protect yourself, you do need to know your rights. Retain control. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. U.S. Steel is in a showdown with workers regarding contract demands, Jesse Russell reports.
U.S. Steel has locked out nearly 1,000 workers in Hamilton, Ontario. The workers have been trying to reach an agreement with the company since their contract expired in July of this year. After union leadership rejected a recent contract offer and made a counteroffer to the company, U.S. Steel chose to lock the workers out instead. The company wants the new contract to close the current benefits plan to new employees and replace it with a defined contribution retirement plan. The company has also made demands regarding the cost of living formula. The workers have been shut out of the plant since 7 p.m. on Sunday. The shutout comes as the Canadian government is taking U.S. Steel to court, alleging that the company has failed to meet employment and production goals it agreed to when it took over Stelco 3 years ago.
Republicans who swept into office November 2nd in state houses and governor's mansions nationwide are determined to do all they can to kill job creation projects funded by President Obama's economic stimulus. Wisconsin is a case in point. GOP Governor-elect Scott Walker is vowing to kill an $810 million high-speed rail project between Milwaukee and the state capital of Madison and thousands of jobs that go along with it. Work is already underway, and killing it next year would mean costing Wisconsin millions of dollars. Robert Craig is executive director of Wisconsin Citizen Action.
People were not voting in order to reduce jobs, reduce investments in the Wisconsin economy, and do things that cost us money in the process. I don't think there's any mandate to do that. To actually cost the state millions and millions of dollars just to get out of this project, just to service ideology and to service a campaign pledge is, as we've been saying, it's economic treason.
Craig says the project would create 4,732 construction jobs and another 9,570 permanent jobs. Annual maintenance cost for the rail line would be just $750,000. Another Republican governor, Christie in New Jersey, recently killed a $3 billion federally funded rail tunnel project between New Jersey and New York.
There are already other governors lining up to say that they will take the money. The new governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, says we'd love to create more family-supporting jobs for New Yorkers, and we'll take the money if Wisconsin's going to turn it down.
Times have been turbulent for the airline industry, but some U.S. Airways workers who were recently furloughed could find themselves back in the jump seat. The airline said it plans to hire new employees and recall some furloughed workers. Due to attrition and planned retirements, the airline is in need of 420 flight attendants and 80 pilots by July 2011. If the company meets its goals, that means all currently furloughed flight attendants will be back on the job. However, it will leave nearly 100 pilots still waiting in the wings. The announcement follows a similar announcement by American Airlines, which is in the process of taking a combined 800 flight attendants and pilots off of furlough. This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association, the NEA, working for great public schools for every student. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. If you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
Always by your side.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
What the hell we fighting for? Just surrender and it won't hurt at all. Just got time to say your prayer.
know what we're fighting for. I don't know if I can help. Welcome back. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Rick Smith Show. And Rick is taking some much-deserved time away to be with family. He will be back tomorrow evening, back to the normal schedule. And sincerely thank you for your time this evening. I mentioned before the top of the hour that I had another one of those little snapshots of the America that the teabaggers and the Republican Party can't wait to finish creating and foist off on the rest of us. Susie Madrack posted this over at one of my favorite sites, Crooks and Liars. And it's it's the story of Aiden Reed. Aiden is 5 years old. And, you know, I read stories like this, and I know that this is the world that the teabaggers voted to have, but I'd really like to ask them if this is really, really, really what they want. Aiden Reed is 5 years old. You know, I've had the privilege and the occasional chore of being part of a parenting team, my lovely wife and I, who have raised a little boy. And anybody who's raised a little boy and a little girl know that it is a radically different process. It just is. And little boys fixate on things, I think, maybe more than little girls do. They choose different stuff. My own little boy, by the time he was walking, was grabbing the handles of the side-by-side refrigerator and scaling it, hand over hand and foot over foot. He was that way. Aiden Reed, however, at the tender age of 5, has developed a lifelong love of monsters. He's not afraid of the monsters under his bed. He wants them to stand up and pose for him so that he can draw pictures of the monsters. He loves vampires. He loves werewolves. He laughs and thinks they're funny. His toys are monsters. His preferred 5-year-old mode of dress is that of a monster. He said, I kind of like to draw knights and jesters and scary clowns and aliens. I like to dress up as nice clowns and scary ones. I can be a wolf or a zombie. Oh, let me tell you something. There's a Sleestak costume that I really want. Sleestaks? I thought I was the last man on the planet who remembered Sleestaks. What was the character's name? Chaco? Of course, that got remade into a movie, so maybe that's where he got it. But Aiden lives in a world where he is not threatened by monsters. Aiden, at 5 years old, lives in a world where he is threatened by something that is much more prosaic, much more horrifying, and much more real than any monster. Aiden has acute lymphoblastic leukemia. When you're 5 and you're Aiden and you have acute lymphoblastic leukemia, you spend weeks in the hospital. You're subjected to brutal rounds of chemotherapy. You get infections easily. You have spinal taps. And every day becomes an endless parade of horror and torment. And still Aiden sits and draws his monsters. That's how he passes the time while the chemo is flowing into his veins. That's how he passes the time when he's too sick to get out of his bed and walk around. But now, Aiden Reed is drawing monsters for his very life. His mama, Katie Reed, comes from a place called Clearwater, Kansas. You know, Kansas, another of those hellholes that were polluted by right-wingers talking about their family values. Aiden started bruising for, you know, next to no reason at all, and the bruises wouldn't go away. Aiden got a cough that wouldn't go away. He just didn't feel good, and that's unusual. When you see a normal little five-year-old boy and they're just listless and lay there, you go to the doctor if you can. And eventually the diagnosis came in September. Acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Now here's the good news for Aiden Reed. His chances of surviving the disease are pretty good. They're better than 90%. Acute lymphoblastic leukemia is the most common and curable form of leukemia. There's only one problem. Mommy and Daddy had five-year-old Aiden, and they were so excited because they were expecting their next child, who was born shortly after the diagnosis. And shepherding a precious child like Aiden, through leukemia, whether curable or not, is time-consuming. And it took all of Aiden's mommy's and daddy's time to take care of him. They were trying to be, the Reeds, a typical American family of a bygone era. They consciously decided that while the children were small, they would live on one income, Aiden's daddy's, and Aiden's mama would stay home and take care of the children. Well, that couldn't last because Aiden's illness required both of them. And there's no health insurance. See, that's the part of this story that is the free market right-wing wonderland that the Republican Party dreams of so fervently. For all of you and all of us and all of the Aidens, there was no insurance, no health care. I mentioned that Aiden likes to draw pictures of monsters. Aiden is drawing for all he is worth, literally. Aiden's monster pictures have sold in excess of 2,400 of them. Can you imagine being 5 years old and being told that you're badly sick, but no matter how bad you feel,
it's great if you can keep drawing your pictures, Aiden, because that's the only way we're going to be able to pay enough money to keep you alive. See, it's stories like this that make me want to find Rand Paul, that make me want to find Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, Boehner, whatever, and Eric Cantor, and all of these denizens of the dark free market night, who so easily and glibly talk about their family values, and ask them about the Aidens of this world. Well, you see, that's good for him. It's character building. He's learning the value of hard work. They printed out 2,460 of Aiden's drawings. She's gotten orders from Japan, Italy, Brazil, literally all over the globe, Aiden's mother has. But he has to keep selling pictures because he needs 2 years of chemotherapy. He's been removed from kindergarten so he can focus on getting better and draw more pictures. But what, I ask you, is wrong? What is so dysfunctionally, utterly, totally, pathologically wrong with a country that it has a significant percentage of its citizenry who are more than happy to have this story repeated often with no happy ending? Time after time after time. And they are by no means out of the woods. Because, as Alan Grayson so eloquently and briefly noted, Mommy and Daddy are operating on the Republican health care plan right now. And that health care plan is don't get sick. Don't get sick. Don't get sick. Because that's all the Republican Party has offered to Mr. and Mrs. Reed. That's all. And this is the dream world of the teabagger, where little boys draw pictures to pay their own hospital bills instead of this country actually, what's the phrase the right wing likes to use? Cherishing a culture of life and providing for his medical care, no questions asked. More than anything else, I think it's the fact that this country and a significant portion of them are willing to let these cases proliferate like dandelions after a spring rain that makes me question whether this country can long survive. Because this country needs Aiden Reed. We don't just need Aiden Reed at 5 years old. We need him at 25, 35, and 85. And yet, the teabaggers, they say they don't. Because in the libertarian wonderland, if Aiden doesn't have the money to survive, well, once you've read Ayn Rand, you understand that Aiden doesn't need to survive, and America doesn't need Aiden. And that's why, just every now and then, I get this urge to look into the eyes of one of these right-wingers, a Rand Paul or a John Boehner, whatever, an Eric Cantor, a Mitch McConnell, a Daryl Issa. I want to look into their eyes and just look as deeply as I can in search of a place I know that I will not find. Looking deep into their eyes to see if there's any last remaining vestige of a soul lurking anywhere within the walking nightmare horror monsters that they are. The story I'm looking at, and I know that talking about pictures on the radio is a lot like dancing about architecture. They're precious, and they're cute. They're adorable. And they are of Aiden's impressions of a monster. But they aren't monsters. They're merely products of a 5-year-old boy's precious imagination. The monsters. No, for you fans of the old Twilight Zone series, the monsters aren't due on Maple Street. The monsters have landed in Washington, D.C. And they walk up and down Constitution and Independence and Pennsylvania. And they call themselves conservative. And they call themselves family values. And they call themselves Christian. And they eat their lobster lunches paid for by their lobbyist pals. And they live their days never thinking, never knowing, never suspecting, never imagining an America in which a 5-year-old boy has to draw pictures in hopes of securing his continued survival. And people walk past them and they don't even know that they're monsters. But they are. Sweet Jesus, they are. To the phones we go. Jim calls in. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm well.
Good.
Several hours takes a little toll on the pipes, but I think I'll be okay.
Oh, well, I think you do it quite well. As far as any possibilities of any mass movement to offset what has happened last Tuesday, it's going to take a lot of time. It's a very discouraging time in which we live. But the only thing I can offer you tonight is this. From the sparks will come the flame.
Indeed, Jim. And with that in mind, I suggest that it is well past time we start gathering the tinder.
Well, see, that's the problem. I think you have to be highly regimented or and organized. And I think one of your callers made a statement that the Republicans imitated the anti-war movements in Vietnam or before Vietnam and during Vietnam.
Well, they've adopted a lot. Well, in the last couple of years, Jim, they've adopted a lot of the organizing of the progressive movement.
Well, I think it's time for the progressive movement to do the same thing and to realize that they're going to have to sacrifice a lot of their diversity in order to form a cohesive unit to achieve their goals. I mean, nothing is done without sacrifice. That's all there is to it.
Right, and the thing is, those issues that are near and dear to each of these separate groups, a part of achieving that unit cohesion is a generalized agreement, I think, Jim, among all concerned, that everyone's issue is vital and is important and will be addressed.
But I think these things, these forces of which you speak, will not come internally. They will come externally, by external forces. That, in other words, they will be compelled, not impelled, to create the necessary element of cohesion.
I think that compulsion is staring us right in the face.
Even so, yes, you're right. But 2 years, 4 years, how long?
Well, some of this, Jim, as you and I have discussed in the past, may be generational.
I think it probably will be, actually. And we're going to have to see things
at
the point that they are so bad and people have been so abused and maltreated and their rights have been eroded, if not taken away, that they're going to be forced by certain economic pressures and political pressures from abroad. It's going to be either the making or breaking of this country.
Well, we are at a place in time where it was very difficult to keep people from referring to the economic meltdown that started under the Bush administration as a depression. And it certainly bore all the hallmarks of one, don't you think?
Yeah, it did. But then again, you had the media and things like that trying to offset it, and you had certain pressures that were exerted to ameliorate those conditions so that people would not, for lack of a better term, take to the streets and say, look, something's wrong here. In other words, it's going to take something pretty catastrophic and pretty deadly.
Well, let the Republicans have their way.
Well, I'm afraid that's what's going to happen. And, you know, I'd like to see what they're going to do. I mean, what solutions are they going to bring to the table?
They have none. They're only all of the solutions and the deficit hullabaloo that they raised, that was all kabuki, Jim, and you and I both know.
Oh, I know.
What they want is their front feet back in the trough.
Well, but how long are they going to be allowed to stay at that trough? When the American electorate realizes they have been hoodwinked and they are, you know, voting and have voted against their own best interests. I mean, is it going to take another depression? Is it going to take another threat from abroad? A threat from abroad would only hurt the Republican interest. You know that. I know that. Because you know how
right,
people are about
the right
security
wing
and this, that, and the other.
We don't even need a threat from abroad, Jim. The right wing is more than willing to make one up. Witness David Broder, prating about Iran and about how Barack Obama can stimulate the economy by attacking Iran. That was nothing short of patent insanity.
Well, of course it is, because what it's going to do is calls the entire Middle East to join with them against us, and it's not going to be a World War II type situation that's going to bring to get people together. It's going to be a World War III. And after that, as Einstein said, World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones.
Correct. So I tend to think, frankly, one, we can't afford, and I hate to say it, begin any sentence with that because it sounds like I'm on the right wing track. I'm not. We really can't afford to attack Iran. We can't buy the gasoline. But secondary to that, is the fact that if the right wing simply gets enough power to do what it wants to do.
Well, if they should try to attack Iran, and if they should try to mobilize a military force capable of doing that, our forces as they stand now simply cannot sustain that burden. And, of course, as a backup plan to the volunteer army or the volunteer armed services, we do have a standing draft waiting in the wings. Now, that is on paper. That is, for lack of a better term, Valkyrie, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what is planned. Don't you think they don't have a plan to draft and to reinstate the draft should that become necessary? And I think that's going to turn a lot of people.
That was all fleshed out during the Bush administration.
Oh, long before that, Bob. It was fleshed out when the volunteer army was established. But, I mean, they had to have a backup plan. I mean, why does every young man have to register at the age of 18?
Well, precisely. There is a system in place that features those voluntary, the supposedly voluntary mandatory registrations of every 18-year-old male in this country.
And basically what these draftees would do would be to flesh out, and we're talking about strength management in the military, okay? That's a big thing. You got to have the numbers. You got to have the boots. And if they start drafting people, and if they reinstate the draft, and if their policies by attacking Iran and trying to reassert military power through projected force becomes, you know, their object, then they're going to have to drag in a lot of people who do not wish to be taken in. And fortunately, I have seen in history people being dragged in and taken in. And the results have always been catastrophic through every war I've ever studied in the past century. I mean, you know, it's so easy for these people to wave flags and to trumpet their bugles and to beat their drums and this, that, and the other, but when it comes down to the final analysis and these wars are fought, and if we should even be able to survive a nuclear war, which I don't believe, there is no such thing as a nuclear war that is survivable. But even if it is conventional, and when it's over, there are going to be so many people around who are going to say, what in the world was this about? Well, they have good reasons right now. They're projecting energy, resources, things of this nature.
Well,
how many more people do we have now than we had
when
we went into World War II in the world?
I have a quote for you, and I suspect you will immediately know who stated, who said it, but some people may not. And the quote is as follows, word for word. Of course, the people don't want war. But after all, it's the leaders of the country who determine the policy, and it's always a simple matter to drag the people along, whether it's a democracy, a fascist dictatorship, or a parliament, or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them that they are being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to greater danger.
Exactly.
Hermann Göring. And that's a very real quote.
Yep. He did say that. And, you know, he was right. I mean, he was one of Hitler's paladins who helped galvanize a very honorable nation into doing very dishonorable things. I just wish we could learn from things in the past, but unfortunately we simply have it, a habit of not paying attention to what's gone on before.
To our eternal agony, right?
Yes, we do. And the world is such a different place than it was in 1939, 1940. And we have so many more people.
Well, not just that, Jim. It's also a very different place than it was in 1929.
Well, I'm talking about globally. We're talking about we have limited resources in the planet, and we have three times as many people as we did 60 years ago, or four times as many people. When you think about that, and you think about all these people rubbing shoulders together, that's going to cause friction. And it's going to be an easy way for people to get into armed conflict. It's happening right now. It really is.
Oh, sure it is. Just because CNN and Fox and MSNBC and the like aren't carrying it doesn't mean it's not happening.
No, it's not.
What I was getting at a moment ago is it's a very different world from 1929 as well, because, you know, the global economy collapsed then, but there were means of production in economic engines like the United States to slowly try to get back on its feet. Well, you know what? The United States no longer has the ability to get back on its feet because our factories, our foundries, our means of production, everything is gone to China.
Look at the 1920s. I mean, if, for example, go back to Germany. They had begun to recover, and, you know, even though they had the reparations payments, which were negated by the certain agreements that basically made Versailles null and void, Germany was beginning to get back on its feet gradually, slowly. But when the economic depression hit this country, it immediately collapsed the German economy, which brought Hitler into power. It didn't start in Germany there. It started with us here. And when we weren't able to sustain them through our recovery, and when our economic boom burst, then that's when Adolf Hitler began to sing his bird call. And it wasn't in vain. We know we're getting far afield here, and I just wanted to bring that out. But it started here, and it went to Germany. And, it, you know, that's just the facts of history. But, anyway, I know you're tired. You've had a long broadcast, long evening. A lot of stuff has been discussed. I hope things will get better.
Yeah, another 23 minutes or so to go, but I think we'll make
sure
it to the
you're tired.
Tonight, yeah.
Nonetheless, I hope that that people will see that complacency that was engineered after Obama's election has been a very false complacency.
And so too,
lack of activism,
well, so
or
too,
lack
Jim,
of,
was the,
or not
the
activism.
Outrage, very much a it, false it, outrage.
It's not activism as much as it is realism and people beginning to understand this is not good. And activism creates, or realism, and being aware of things just getting very, very bad, that can really motivate activism. And that's what I'm talking about, a force coming from without, not from within. In other words, the left or progressives or whatever you want to call them, they're going to be forced to do these things. They're not going to like it. And they're not going to like the situations that drive them together. Well, that's what's going to happen, in my opinion. I may be wrong, but we'll see.
We shall. We shall indeed. Jim, thank you very much.
All right. Good night, sir.
You have a good evening. Bye now. See, this is the beauty of radio that is centered on liberal, progressive thought. It is impossible. It is utterly impossible. You cannot turn on Hannity or Beck or Limbaugh or Savage or any of those other thugs and hear people actually processing information. Right-wing radio is the delivery of talking points and marching orders to a dronish, mind-numbed infantry of culture warriors. Liberal radio can never be that. It can be that. Because we care about too many things. And care about too many of the right things. You know, the healthcare story of young Aiden Reed that we talked about a few minutes ago, it sort of has a bookend. And the bookend has to do with a drug addict. A drug addict who so thoroughly abused street drugs, narcotics that he bought illicitly through the black market, that he went deaf. I'm talking, of course, about the most important broadcaster in America, Rush Limbaugh, who is on a hell-bent journey to make sure that we have more, not less, Aiden Reeds. Lately, he has been at war with the idea of pre-existing condition coverage. Here's the quote. "My friends, pre-existing condition coverage is not insurance. It's welfare." No, really. There are some 3 million Americans who have heard him make this argument over the course of a week or so. You know, he likes to say, "I have 20 million listeners." Well, what he's doing is he's taking 4 million listeners a day and multiplying it by 5. Some might say that's dishonest. I would say that that's par for the course for a pathological liar like Rush Limbaugh. Because, A, he's inflating it. And B, they're the same people. They're the same ditto heads. They're the same mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking little troglodytes who call in and say, "Mega dittos from Busted Knuckle, Rush. Well, that's enough about you. Let's talk about about me. Did you know that that pre-existing condition coverage isn't even insurance? It's welfare, I tell you. It's welfare, and it is a fast track to communism." The one piece of the healthcare legislation that just about everybody agreed with, outside of the right-wing, for-profit, agony, misery, illness, and death industry, otherwise known as the healthcare industry. One part of the legislation that just about everybody agreed with was the idea that for-profit insurers should not be able to hang people out to dry for a genetic misfortune or a misfortune run across in the course of breathing in the wrong thing or touching the wrong thing, and then have the insurance company later say, "Well, no, I'm going to cover you. You've got a pre-existing condition. Go die." Pre-existing condition coverage is not insurance, it's welfare. Now, this is a guy who started grabbing his chest during a golf vacation in Hawaii and was promptly transported to the emergency room there, where he was adequately treated, taken to a room, given optimal care, and told to go and live and be well, because Hawaii has a health care system that asked not a dime of him and didn't even look at his lardacious nature and say, "Well, no wonder you're having a heart attack, Rush. You're a tumble guts." But you see, this is typical for the psychopathology of the right wing. He's got his, to heck with you. You see how it works? Now, in Rush's world, it doesn't matter that he now has a pre-existing condition, i.e. heart trouble, or a pre-existing condition, for that matter, of being a junkie. Say it with me. It's okay. Rush Limbaugh is a junkie. Junkies are junkies. They're not recovering. They're not former. They didn't used to be. Rush Limbaugh's a junkie. And the only way he can ever hope to stay clean, if indeed he is staying clean, is to get up every morning and say, good morning, look in the mirror. Ah, good morning, you handsome tub of guts. You're a junkie. It's his only hope. But he's got two pre-existing conditions, at least that we know of. He's a junkie and he's got a heart problem. Well, you see, in the world that he wants to live in, an insurance company could tell him to get stuffed because he's got a pre-existing condition and there is no need to cover him. But you see, he's got his, so to heck with you, because he doesn't have to worry, because there is not a disease on this planet that Flush Flemball could suffer that would cost him even the tiniest fragment, the most minute portion of the $40 million a year that he gets for spewing vomitous hate all over the airwaves. Really? No, he can buy livers, lungs, kidneys. If it can be transplanted, he can buy one and pay cash. Too bad for you that you're not as wealthy as him. That just means that God likes him better in right-wing world. You know how right-wingers are forever saying, oh, the liberals just want to throw money at it. Well, that's because money solves most problems. And Rush Limbaugh is walking, waddling, breathing, babbling truth of that assertion. Now, something might kill him. Something will. Someday. Hopefully sooner rather than later. But short of killing him, there is no illness that he cannot afford to pay cash for, and he need not worry about the fact that he is a walking wad of pre-existing conditions. You get to worry about it. And in the heart of this argument is the question of whether or not the government of we the people, which is empowered by the Constitution to provide for the general welfare, has the right in your name to make a determination that it is in the interests of the general welfare to make sure that insurance companies can't look at you once you have gotten sick through fault or no fault of your own and say, too bad, we don't pay, go die. You know, a lot of people have attributed his strong language to the reason that Alan Grayson was so thoroughly trounced in his congressional district in Florida. They have made that allegation without noting the fact that Alan Grayson won in what had traditionally been a very heavily Republican district in the first place. And without noting that enough money to burn to ashes an entire herd of sopping wet elephants was poured into that race. What really, really, really got under the skin of the Republican Party was the fact that Alan Grayson looked at them and called them what they were and talked about them the way that they really are instead of the way that they want to be talked about. You see, a Republican that is out to do nothing more than loot and steal and torment and torture, a Republican doesn't like to be talked about like the thug that he is. He wants to be treated by the for-profit-only media as if he has some real ideas and is actually worthy of living in civil society, which he ain't. But Alan Grayson stood on the floor of the House and said, here is the Republican health care plan. Don't get sick. And if you do get sick, here's the rest of the Republican health care plan. Die quickly. And at that moment, the Republican Party decided that it did not matter if they what they had to do, that they would remove Alan Grayson from office because they did not ever want to have another member of the Democratic Party step into the well of the House of Representatives and talk about them the way that they damned well deserve to be talked about. To do, in the terminology of old religious dogma, to do that thing which the devil most hates, to call the devil by his name. And when you say that the Republican Party's health care plan is to not get sick, and that if you do get sick, to die quickly, you are calling the devil by his most intimate and profound and secret name. And thus, with vast amounts of secret dollars coming from God knows where, with all of that, they managed to bend Alan Grayson back on their filthy altar of lies, distortions, half-truths, and hate, and carve him open and pull out his beating heart and say, "See here! See here, you Democrats! If we ever catch you talking about us like he did, we got this for you too. Sit down and shut up." And that is the heart and soul of Republican political philosophy. How hard is that to comprehend? Little Aiden Reed will be in my heart for a while yet. He will prove as hard to forget as a little tiny infant whose name resides in my soul to this day, though he was subjected to a grim and a grisly and ghastly death. Years and years ago, a little boy by the name of Son Hudson. Every time I see a Republican, hear a Republican talking about how we cannot afford to take care of the least among us, I will remember Aiden Reed drawing pictures for his very life. I will remember. Every time I hear a Republican talking about cutting the deficit, I will remember little Aiden Reed and how Republicans are willing to cut out his very heart and tell their fine, upstanding, God-fearing, family values espousing Christian followers how they're taking their country back. I will remember. I urge you to remember as well. Pay attention. Be awake in the nightmare. And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Though the night be long and the goal be distant, don't be afraid. For as long as we have each other, for as long as we continue to build our alliances, our friendships, our commitments, one to another and to an America that can finally live up to its lofty promises. For as long as that is the truth, then we have hope. And we have the math. Yes, Lord, we have the math. I want to thank you all for joining me this evening. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your time. It is often forgotten, I think, among people who are privileged with getting behind the microphone, that we are not here, that you are not here for us, but that we, in fact, are here for you. And that no matter how the right wing values itself or the rest of us, or what they would buy us for or sell us for, there is one commodity which they can only have if you choose to give it to them. And that a liberal can only have if you choose to give it to them. And that is your time. Your time. And for your time this evening, I thank you. And for the opportunity to fill in for my good friend and my colleague, and my comrade, Rick Smith, I thank Rick Smith. Thank you also goes out to Brett, who produced the program, even at a vast and great distance. He's done a magnificent job this evening. Thank you. But most of all, thanks again to all of you, and I look forward to the next opportunity for us to get together and talk. This has been The Rick Smith Show, where America comes to talk. I'm Bob Kincaid. Good night, all.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the bitter sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming.
Anthony Weiner from New York. He said that Anwar al-Awlaki's words were too dangerous to be tolerated in the marketplace of ideas. And called for those words to be removed from that marketplace. Representative Weiner argued that these words were dangerous words. That these words were so very